Welcome, everyone, to the Crit Rate Podcast for Wednesday, February 7th. This is episode 79. I'm your host, Justin Skirbo, and today I'm joined by Liz Caetano.
Good evening.
I'm also joined by Justin Chow.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, everyone, to a brand new episode of the Crit Rate Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about Xbox. And whether or not they're going to dissolve into the ether and go away forever. But before... I was just on a roll. Yeah. But before we get started, Liz, what you been playing lately, girl? How you doing?
That was weird.
It was weird.
Yeah, pretty much just Baldur's
Gate. B-Gate.
Yeah, just Baldur's Gate. When I find the time, I've had another busy week. I did, however, also watch the Last of Us 2 documentary.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody...
Grounded? Is that on YouTube?
Yes.
Yeah, that's on
YouTube.
Yeah,
it's on YouTube.
Yeah, I just saw that show up on my feed. I didn't watch it yet.
It is great.
Really?
I mean, I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I love a...
The God of War one was...
Yeah, right? Like, behind the curtain, yeah. Sort of how the games are made. Super interesting. And also, I mean, it gives you, like... It was an interesting game, too, because it had so much controversy.
I was going to say, did they talk about, like, the controversy and, like... Because I think that it was also, like, partially developed and released during COVID and stuff.
Yeah, so they had anticipated creating this documentary, so they started it, and they were filming it, and then they stopped filming because of COVID, and everybody went remote. And then they talked about... And then they come back, and they have another set of interviews that they're like, these were done after the fact, and so they're talking about the game in retrospect.
Ah, interesting.
So they don't have, like, the live moment where, like, the game gets leaked online.
Oh, so they just had the before and the after, talking
about, like, this is what happened, and this is how, it, you know, like, then all of a sudden the world closed down. We have to figure out how to work remotely, and this is how we did it. And because that happened, that's how the leak happened. It's like, we keep everything on our servers that you have to be connected to in the building at all times. We never worked from home because we're afraid of leaks.
That's
and
pretty
then
fascinating.
As soon as we work from home, like, a month later, there's a leak online. And I also didn't really know a lot about the leak because I almost wanted to, like, reach the screen and tell him, like, just so you know, bro, like, I didn't look up anything. The game wasn't spoiled for me. I had the pure experience. I didn't know that he was going to die. I didn't know any of that.
It was a massive problem. It was a massive problem.
Yeah. So he talked about, like, the person who did it, and they were like, how it happened. It's like, first they just started releasing some, like, dev videos that kind of didn't really show anything. Like, no spoilers. Like, just sort of random things. Like, okay, this isn't that bad. They figured out what was happening, and they closed the gate that the hacker was using to get the information. They were like, huge mistake, because that happens, he just releases everything he has.
Yeah.
And he, you know, they talked about, like, oh, we were so angry about it, and we found out the person that did it is, like, a kid, is, like, a fan. And he said he did it because he thought if he released all this stuff, it would have forced our hand to release the game earlier. And, like, he didn't realize that we were like, that doesn't work that way. Like, the game wasn't finished. We kind of just put it out. Like, he was looking at it and he thought, like, look, it's done. You should just release it because it's been delayed so many times. And he's like, that's not the way the world works. And so
it was completely altruistic. He was trying to do things for the greater good.
So, yeah, because he thought, like, you have in your mind. And then he kind of talks about the game and how, like, the message from the game, like, relates to him. And he's like, you have in your mind, like, this idea of this person who's, like, so sadistic and, like, out to get us and to just do such a terrible thing that, like, you know, really just upset everybody in the studio and just, like, ruined all of our experiences. And it was so upset. He's like, I was so angry and I just wanted to punish this kid. Like, I wanted every bad thing to happen to him. And then... that, like, could happen to, like, legally, not, like, physically, obviously. But
that plays so well into their storytelling.
And too, he was like, and I just sat there. I said to myself, like, if anybody is going to take a message away from this game, like, not to seek revenge and to see something from somebody else's point of view and, like, empathize with your enemy, like, it should be us. So
imagine if they changed the ending of the entire story because of this kid.
Yeah, he dies.
A lot of people would probably be happy. But damn. That sucks.
So, yeah, so they talked about that. That was very interesting. They talked about, like, Laura Bailey, who voices Abby, right? Like, all the death threats she was getting.
Crazy and, hate.
Yeah, the hate that they were getting.
Did she cry in the thing?
She almost cried. She held it together, but she was talking about, like, when she was recording it, she was pregnant. So she's like, this is, like, just after my son was born.
That's
and they
terrible.
Have to, like, you know, I was getting all these death threats, and then people from the company, you know, they look into them to make sure that, like, you know, they're not
credible
and they're not near me. And that's when she started, like, getting upset. She's like, you know, I just had a baby and
in
my home, and now I'm thinking, like, what most, if, and like, this is like the first time this has happened to me. I don't know that this happens in the industry. Like, what if these, you know, what if something comes and I don't feel safe in my house?
Yeah.
So, it's like the most, like, emotionally vulnerable time of your life, right? Too. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, right. Tough time. So, so that was kind of negative on a positive. But it was good. I mean, and it's good to talk about. It's good to see, you know, really how, when these negative things happen, how it affects people.
Yeah. PlayStation does a really good job with those kinds of documentaries. And it makes me wonder, like, which ones get the cut, you know? Because I watched a similar documentary, it's not PlayStation, but on Sea of Stars.
Yeah.
And it's like, they have to plan so far in advance. Right? Like, how do you know that you're the shit that far in advance, you know?
Well, I mean, I guess when you're a sequel.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
Yeah.
Because, like, the God of War 1, 2, like, those are both.
Yeah, sequels.
Yeah, right?
The God of War documentary was about the sequel to God of
War? Ragnarok. Oh, no, it was not. No, it was not.
An existing IP.
Oh,
but
that's
a lot of faith.
That's the interesting part.
It's a lot of faith, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely a lot of faith.
Mm. Anyway.
So yeah, it was very good. Strongly recommend. It was also interesting to see. I feel like the first time playing it, also, though, now I feel like I don't need to replay the game because I feel like I just, like, experienced it all again by watching this documentary. So maybe I won't play it again before the show. But it was interesting also to see, like, how they were talking about the how they were, like, writing the story, and they were like, every time they wrote something, they were like, oh, this is gonna piss people off, like, let's do it.
Yeah, that's kind of awesome.
And seeing from their point of view, it was like, kind of like, I kind of get now sort of why they were doing those things. It was like to have people have this react, like, they were talking about, like, we really need people to get really upset and feel really emotional so that when you play the other side of the story, like, you have to feel like Ellie. Like, you have to feel like, I'm gonna freaking kill this woman. Like, and we don't want you to be sad that Joel's dead. We want you to be angry and, like, want revenge. And then play the other side of the story, and then hopefully that anger sort of quells a little bit.
Yeah. I would say, like, it is interesting that they planned that.
Yeah, it's very smart, like, the way that they were doing things. It's really well thought,
like,
out.
If I was to put it into, like, three main bullet points, it's like, Joel dies, and then because of that, you go through killing all of these particularly key characters pretty savagely, and you're like, I'm cool with this. And then it forces you to look at that, like, be that reflection point and, experience that on the other side, which I definitely wasn't happy about in the beginning. But then it's like, because the fire was so strong, and then it just extinguished it by you playing the other side, and you're just
like, they would talk about, like, specific points too, like, especially with, like, the dogs. They brought up that. They were like, people were really... playtesters are really unhappy about killing these dogs.
Yeah.
And we want you to feel that way, though. Like, that's not, you know, people would, like, say to us, like, where they're complaining about how many dogs they have to kill, and he's sitting there like, I know. That's the whole point of the game, is that you should be upset to do these things, and then you go play as Abby, and you see her specifically interact with this dog that you know is dead because you killed it.
I remember.
And you're, like, going back into the past and seeing it alive and seeing it interact with the dog and, like, being nice and, like, feel that moment of, like, you know, this dog is dead and it's your fault.
I remember there's, like, at some point, and I think this was probably in a YouTube video that I watched, where they pointed out that they said that you wouldn't be hurting any dogs in the game. No, knowing that they had planned
that
all
along. They also said in the documentary, which I was like, I don't know how you would have done that, but they said, there is a way to complete the game without killing any dogs.
Yeah, right.
You have to be right. I'm like, that would be so hard.
That's obnoxious and annoying.
It would be so hard.
It's also
hard.
Like...
But they were like, if you really want to do it, you can, but nobody did.
Yeah.
Because it would, like, how could you even...
Yeah.
I don't know how you could.
That's an insane lift.
That would have been...
I will say, like...
Super extremely hard mode.
Video gaming documentaries definitely hit differently. Like, in the world of, like, so many documentaries being available to you, it's just... It's fun to, like, be a part of a documentary almost as the player.
Yeah.
Nice. Like, the Xbox One that came out, absolutely outstanding. Like, then I started going down, like, a rabbit hole. I think, Justin, you tipped me off to this way back when, like, maybe 5 or so years ago, where I was just watching these old, it looked like early 2000s documentaries of, like, rock Rockstar and like Blizzard and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, the old game trailer stuff.
Yeah. That was so good.
Yeah, they did a lot of cool stuff like
there
that.
There was like one sort of piece of news that came out of it that people are talking about that I don't even heard of. Is at the very end of the documentary, they're talking to Neil Druckmann and they say like, are you going to make... I don't think they ask him like, are you going to make another one? But he's... They talk about the ending and, you know, sort of what it means. And they're like, oh, we want it to be like, you know, we wanted it to have this moment of like, she's lost everything, but like have a little bit of like, maybe like uplifting note at the end. And he says, and there is like, whether or not I would do more and continue the story, like, I will say, you know, it would only be if I had something to say and I've like, you know, tossed it around. And there, for me, there is one more piece, one more story I want to tell that like has a through line. Cause he says like, he talks about the games too. He's like, you know, the first game is very much about like this, like love, you know, like loving and between a parent and then loss
and a child
and a child. Yeah. And he's like, and the second game is about revenge, right? Revenge and forgiveness. And he's like, so every game I've had creates a theme, but with a through line that like connects them all. And so that's how he describes, like, there is one other theme that I do want to explore. And I see the through line of how I could make the stories all connect.
That's sick.
He did, like, so in so many words, he confirmed, and he was like, and someday, like, I would like to explore that. He also said he would like to make a prequel starring
Joel.
No, what's Joel's brother's name? Sam.
But you don't see him for like half the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what he does and how he finds the town, I think.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. Well, this is part of what makes that studio so cool, is like they are masters at making you feel something, right? You know, like, as well done as like the gameplay systems and mechanics are and how polished the games look, it's really the way that they tell a story. I mean, that's obviously why they're in filmmaking and stuff now too. So it's just cool.
It's a scene setting, like, to be able to bring the brother back, like, you meet him when he's, and then you find out that he has a wife, which means that if there's a prequel, you get to see his entire life joining the Fireflies, getting married, like finding new comrades after leaving Joel and the smuggling business.
Tommy, that's the brother.
Tommy. That's a great story. That's a great story. That's even like,
but so that would be separate from whatever third game he's talking about. He said like that would be like a spinoff. Yeah. That would be like a...
That seems like a small little thing.
Like the Uncharted spinoff sort of.
Yeah. Or like Ellie's little spinoff with her
I think left longer behind. Than that.
Yeah.
But
probably more than that. But
so, in so many words, he confirmed that he would and will probably make a third Last of Us game.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he should.
I think that was sort of expected. They ended it on a bit of a, not a cliffhanger, but like, it felt like there was more to go.
Yeah. I was not convinced that they were going to make a third one.
Really?
Yeah. No, okay. Yeah,
I don't know. Because I just feel like sometimes maybe... Which I guess you could say about the second.
The best
one
things like come in threes, right?
Yeah,
that's true.
But I kind of thought at the end of it, like, it ended sort of where it needed to end, kind of like
it.
Are you gonna like? It felt like the end of the story was very like, it was sort of left a bit on a cliffhanger, but like very intentionally. And are you just gonna like answer everybody's questions by saying what happened? Like, they're like, and they talk about the end of the story. They're like, why does she put the guitar down? And like, where is she going when she leaves? Like, that's up to the player to figure out, you know, and it could mean anything to anybody. But if you create another game, then it doesn't mean anything to anybody. There is a very just definitive answer to what happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I suppose I think about it like, I try to imagine it like most trilogies where, I mean, there's nothing really unresolved at the end of it, except like her internal resolve, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean her relationship
with like herself and the world. It's like her choices. Yeah, her choices is exactly
that's unresolved.
Right. Yeah,
it's I mean, like her relationship. Her.
We're supposed to infer that she's coming to some conclusion when she walks away or whatever, but like,
she Dina had her, the baby with the guy started with a J because he named him, she names him JJ. Yeah,
that was like the most shocking part of
that was the most boom gone.
I was not prepared.
I really was not prepared for that. So, yeah. Well, so you assume at the end that Dina takes JJ and she leaves and that Ellie is going to go find her, but you don't know that that's what she's doing. Mm. You just are inferring that.
Yeah.
But I think that's what happens.
Well,
but yeah, so I don't know. Would you play as Ellie? Would you play as Dina? Would you play as JJ? Maybe it's 10 years later and JJ's going around killing zombies. Right.
And like the first thing is he's coming back from hunting deer and he's feeding his old mom named Ellie.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. So yeah, the that sounds fascinating. I do enjoy those documentaries and I will take my first opportunity to watch that.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah. Easy watch.
Justin, what have you been playing?
Okay, so I spent a lot of money this weekend because I bought a lot of games. Some of them aren't even out yet. Like, I did pre-order Final Fantasy VII.
Yep.
Rebirth. I did buy Persona 5, and I've been dabbling in that
Persona
a little bit.
Persona 3.
Sorry, it basically looks like, but yeah, it's not. Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second. Persona 3.
Reload.
Yeah, I haven't gotten too far, but I see what you see. Well, you mentioned before, you're like, I got to the first day, and I'm just like, yeah, here I am again. I feel the same way. Let me see. Oh, I ended up getting Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm Final Bar.
Yep, great game.
I know, wildly weird side thing. It's fantastic.
It's a great game.
I really do enjoy that a lot.
Is that the rhythm game?
Yeah, it's the rhythm game, but you're going through all the Final Fantasy, like all the Final Fantasy music in both like pixel and orchestrated versions of it, and it's like fun. And it feels like Elite Beat Agents. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
Is it fun? Like,
it's fun. Like, you can pick up and just play and just like listen to good music and like.
That's what I mean. Like, is it fun because of the music or is it fun?
So that
I mean, I'm in like a weird because I don't. Again, I'm really like.
Yeah, right.
But I really like rhythm games.
So I'm gonna tell you this.
But it's like I don't play rhythm games for the music.
When I'm playing, it feels like my fingers are pressing buttons, not as if I'm dancing, but almost as if I'm like. Playing the instruments and also like in certain ways, like when you're moving the joysticks back and forth and doing these things, it feels like I'm kind of like slashing. I don't know. It feels good. It feels like a weird cross between like battle rhythm, like playing the music, but then also feeling the battle at the same time. It's weird. And also there's a cooperative mode, which is really fun too. And there's a versus mode, which I've been playing around with a friend of mine online. But between all of the modes, like it's really fun. And it's like really fun to discover these games through their music. And it's funny because, I showed my sister this as well and Arthur, who have not played any Final Fantasy games. And as they're listening to the music of each game, they're like, this is so wild because it's like, some of it is like steampunky and then some of it is like kind of like heavy and like beat. And then some of it is just like very quiet and somber. And it's like, it hits all these ranges in this like one game. And then I'm just like, you really got to play this game. Cause it's like, it does cover a lot of bases.
From a music perspective, it's just an incredible experience. Cause you'll dive into any of those games. And we were talking about this when you first started playing where it doesn't. So you can't play every song right away. You have to kind of like get through a game to unlock a key to unlock another game.
Okay.
So you start with two, at least when I started, it gave me two different games.
Really?
Yeah. I also like got like the DLC version or whatever. So I'm going to just give me an extra one or whatever.
They have Octopath Traveler as a DLC. Did you know?
And it's awesome.
Yeah.
So I have, since that game came out, I bought the most expensive version, like the $100 version of that game to get every DLC that ever comes out for it. And I have not far beyond platinum that game. And I have not uninstalled it because every time I finish a game that I'm playing, that's like my palate cleanser. Like I go back to that and I just play it for a while. So Liz, to your point, it is, from a rhythm game standpoint, it's definitely a little unconventional. It's not like Guitar Hero. It's not like Amplitude.
Okay.
Like, you are hitting buttons in timing and all this kind of stuff, but there's a lot of weird like brain bending stuff. Like, you'll be holding certain buttons and then like hitting the stick in certain directions. There's two modes. There's like the battle mode, which is like a static bar that's coming across. And then there's also the travel mode where like, One is like fight music, right? So you'll do like battle themes and boss themes to it. And then the other is like world map themes or exploration themes or airship music. And that, it's the same game, but it handles itself differently where there's like these moving bars that you have to like trace with the sticks and stuff. So it's a little weird to get used to. I definitely had to figure out like sort of a learning curve. But once you get into the rhythm, it's like, it's one of those games where it's like, like when I was playing DDR, I could play on heavy and like not be too phased. Like there were certain songs that I could not play because they were just so insane. I can't play most of this game on hard. Like it is crazy. In like the bar from like easy mode to, it's called ultimate, is like the highest difficulty, is absolutely fucking insane.
Yeah.
So like, wait, ultimate I think is the third version. The purple one is like supreme or something like that. Isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I feel like that's how. Like most rhythm games,
but
are.
I will say,
so
like,
maybe there's five because I definitely play on normal and sometimes hard.
There's the first one is I think it's like standard, basic,
yeah.
And then the second one is expert. Then the third one is ultimate, which is like orange. And then the purple one is the supreme.
So maybe I'm just playing on the first two because the final difficulty I tried a couple of times. I can't even hang at all.
The orange, like, the ultimate, or whatever, that is actually where you. I feel like that's where the game is meant to be played. Because, and the only reason why I say this is because you're playing every note, and it gets, like, all of the songs feel way more unique.
You're
like,
currently playing on that?
Yeah. Me and Katie have been playing on that.
Really?
It's not as hard as you think. Like, you just have to play the same song, like, a couple times, and you're like, okay, I see the breakdown in
what
this.
What number difficulty does it say they are? Because once you get past, like eight or
five
nine.
Five or eight.
Okay, once you get past, like, eight or nine, it's just
no, that's
bonkers.
Silly.
Like,
that's
it's
silly.
Just not possible.
Like, I'm in an arcade playing this game and spending lots of money. Like, I'm not that person.
Yeah.
But
no, I float at like seven. Seven's sort of like my peak. Like, I can fuck with eight sometimes, but like anything beyond that is like, you know, some of the later tracks are like 13 or something crazy. It's
given,
like,
yeah, I just started. But yeah. It has been really fun. The cooperative mode is also, and it does recommend songs for you, like at the end of each track. And it does unlock songs. Mm. It doesn't unlock entire like games full of songs that you can play through.
But
in,
like, the music select mode, so not there, like the story mode.
Yeah, so there is a progress there as well. So you can play with somebody and still make progress. So it's fun.
I think you also get like a lot of mats, so you can like level up your characters.
Oh, materials and stuff.
Yeah,
I haven't. We have been leveling really fast in co-op. I don't really know any of the crafting or any of that stuff. I haven't looked into that. If there is any crafting,
you don't really have to worry. Well,
you can add items to people too.
It's just like boosts. Like, if you know you're going to play a song that has a lot of notes, like, you could just add like an EXP bonus or whatever to them.
Anyway.
At a certain point, you have to do that to get viable builds for later stages.
I haven't started looking up anything yet. I've just been kind of enjoying it. But so far, the game has been surprisingly fun. And it is 100% I have like 30 minutes and I just want to like mess around and listen to some music and like press some buttons. And this feels really good. I feel like that game has been, when there's a moment to sit down, and it's like, you got Persona 3 or you got Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm, and I'm just like between these two. One just, there's a commitment level that I can't deny. It's just whenever it comes down to a game that I need to play, I also did download and, or rather I installed Resident Evil 4.
Yep.
And I do plan on playing that.
You haven't started it yet?
No.
See, it's so funny. I guarantee you, when you start playing that game, if you give that game 1 hour of your time, you're going
to
be fucking hooked.
I feel
it's
like I'm
so
going
good.
To. The first village like part and just like feeling the controls, I'm going to want to continue playing that. So I'm not worried about that. I did also download Foam Stars.
Did you really?
I did. Really? I downloaded Foam Stars just because it's a free game.
Today, right?
And I had a friend who has a PlayStation 5 and she barely plays anything on it. I'm like, this game is free. Would you like to? We should try it sometime.
Did you try it?
No, not yet.
Oh, okay.
I just downloaded it. It was taking a while. But I walked her through It Takes Two. Mm. And man, it's like, it's fun, but it's like cheesy. And it's like,
it's not magical after the first time.
Yeah, some of the puzzles are also like kind of, I don't know, simple. And like the cutscenes are like cringy. So it's like,
there's
a lot of groaning.
Yeah. No,
yeah, exactly.
That game is only cool when you're like, what is this game gonna do next?
Yeah,
you know, that's what made it cool. I would never go back and play that game again.
Yeah,
yeah, the cooperative made the experience.
Yeah, for sure.
What really made that experience was that one level where you take the little boat and then you go in the room and it's like the that same room from Ocarina of Time. That was cool.
Yeah, you told me about that. That's what I'm hoping to get back to, but I don't think we're going to continue playing that game.
I don't remember this part.
It's a special...
It's like a hidden room. Oh. Yeah, if you find it, it's like... So you know in Ocarina of Time when you go into Clocktown. Castletown, whatever the main town is.
Okay.
You know that first room that you go in that has like a million jars in it?
Oh, yeah. You did tell me about this.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
But other than that, I found my analog pocket nicely squared away in the corner of my room, and I opened it up. Haven't charged it forever. 68% still.
Dude.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's an amazing piece of technology.
Yeah. That thing is like a...
tank.
Tank.
It's great. Tank. So I reloaded up Final Fantasy Legends because you know what got me back into that? Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm has the music. Mm-hmm. Listening to that, I'm like, holy crap, this is amazing.
Dude, there was some discovery that I did during that game too. Like, I've never played Mystic Quest. Do you ever play Mystic Quest?
I think so.
Dude,
yeah.
The battle music in that game is boss. It is so good.
Oh, no. Mystic Quest is different. You showed me this, and the battle music was really good. Yeah.
This one.
Yeah.
I never played it, but when I played Theater Rhythm, I was like, yo, this song is insane. Yeah. Like, it goes way harder than it has any right to. It's really good.
Yeah. Cool. That'd be fun to have on vinyl. Anyway, so that's my past week.
Nice. Well, I have been thoroughly deep in Persona 3. Now, here's the thing. I was excited about Persona because I have memories of Persona 5. Here's my gauge, right?
Okay. Yeah, did you play 4?
Loved 4. 4 is what like got me hooked, right?
Right.
Then you play 5, and 5 is just a total revelation. It's like it's so much better than what all these games were on like multiple levels, right? From a storytelling perspective, from a style perspective, music, every part of that game was so elevated, like it was just unbelievable. Persona 3 Reload carries some of that style,
mm-hmm.
but you can tell where they put the work in and where they didn't as far as like the remake. Like, the battle sequences look awesome, and like the end scenes and the all-out attacks and stuff, they look great. Like, they reanimated those and they're really, really cool. And I'm also somewhat convinced that they replaced some of the overworld music with stuff from Persona 5. Not exactly Persona 5, but they're using the same exact sound font, like the exact same instruments.
Sound font, interesting.
And stuff.
That is, I didn't even know that.
What a fascinating little phrase.
But I knew exactly what you're talking about, and I would 100% agree.
Yeah, but I will, but here is Persona has a couple of different ticks to it, right? So it's like you have the dungeon crawling, which is basically like, you know, you're crawling a dungeon. And then
you still shoot yourself in the head to make your persona.
All of you do. Yeah, and everybody does.
It happens constantly.
Yeah.
And I know I said this was like the provocative thing that I was interested in before. And it's like, so I'm like 8 hours into the game at this point, and they don't explain it at all. At all. They're just like, this is how you use your persona. And they make a big deal out of like, just pull the trigger. And then they do. And then even one of the characters draws attention to it. And they're like, why did they make this look like a gun? And why do I have to shoot myself in the head to use it? Well, whatever. I'm like, that's it. And I'm like, fuck, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway.
Wow. Were there any disclaimers at the beginning of the game?
Maybe. I don't know.
Mm. There was disclaimers in the beginning of Persona 5.
Yeah. There's
about like any semblance of this to anybody's life is completely coincidental.
Yeah, there,
and stuff.
There might have been some piece of text at the front.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I feel like there would have to be to say like this game shows images of self-harm.
But it looks like they're doing it confidently, and it doesn't look like it's harming
them. Dude, except for the first girl that you get. She looks like such a pansy.
Out.
It's like, just commit, you know?
Just commit to shooting yourself in the head.
It's a fiction, okay?
Yeah.
It's fiction.
What a pansy. Unless you write the word pansy.
I didn't say that.
It's so thick. Like, it's so prevalent in the game to the point where I have to think that this was made for some audience in Japan that have some...
An emo audience?
Like,
yeah, that's exactly some it. Yeah, 100%. Thank you for putting into words.
Yeah,
which is
so
cool.
So
I would have been totally into that if I was 13.
Right.
Yeah.
So as far as the rest of the game, it's very like, I don't know, I've achieved the point where it starts to feel pretty formulaic, where it's like, okay, I know exactly what my options are during the day. It's essentially when you get to spend your time, right? And when you spend your time, it's like you're either investing in social links, which is like you're hanging out with people,
right,
or you're doing some activity that raises one of your stats. In this game, there's only three stats. I think there were five in Persona 5.
Yeah, there's six, I think.
Yeah, there's more than three. Let's put it that way.
I was actually happy that there's only three.
It does simplify things, but it also then creates this weird dynamic of like, well, what am I supposed to be doing? Like, I don't know. I got to the point where I progressed far enough in the dungeon where it was like, okay, you can't go any farther. Like, so just do day stuff. Like, just don't come back to the dungeon until something changes. And we're like, okay. So then I had like 2 weeks of in-game time where I was just like doing the daily stuff, and it's like cool, and I like to see how like the story progresses and whatever, but something about this protagonist feels very lifeless to me. Like,
he doesn't say, I'm so glad you said that, he doesn't say anything. There's no like personality behind it.
He doesn't even have like an expression. Like it's very flat, and people are just talking to him like he's some person, and I don't know, it's just, it's very underwhelming as far as like a main character. I haven't gotten many of the other like party members, so I'm hoping that there's some more personality that comes up. But there's like, I mean, just from where I'm at now, and again, it's like playing games in retrospect, but it's like the second character you get is like the Ryuji. He's exactly Ryuji. Yeah. His personality type is exactly the same as this character that's in 5, and very similar to the guy in 4. I can't remember his name right now.
And so,
So it's like they definitely are like falling into specific archetypes.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, all right, like, you know, whatever. And I don't know. I got into this rhythm where I was going through the days and kind of like figuring out how to spend my time. And at a certain point, I was just like, okay, this is like fine, but I'm not like fully engaged. Like, it did fully engage me for the first couple hours. And then I kind of like hit this pace where I'm like, okay, I could, like, I know how to do this, but I'm not like loving it, you know?
I feel the same thing. I also would say that, like, in the back of my head, I'm also putting it up to the idea that this game is a remake of an old game. Like, Persona 5, you can't keep it and have it at that. You can't compare it to that and have it at that level or hold it to that standard, because it is like an old PS2 game. Like,
yeah, it is a PS2 game, and it was also a PSP game. And I've learned all the different versions had some sort of problem with them.
Oh, really?
So like the Fez version is the one that has like all of the story, but apparently in that version you can't control any of your party members. They're all AI controlled. Which is like, that's terrible.
Yeah.
And then the PSP one, which is the one that I played through the first couple hours on the PSP one, it basically removes all of the world traversal and
that's terrible.
And just turns basically the non dungeon crawling sections into a visual novel. And it's like, that I kind of hate. Like,
yeah.
Why would I want to do that, you know? So this definitely seems like the best version of this game to play.
Yeah.
But it got kind of tired pretty fast. Yeah. So in my...
Are you going to finish it? How long is it?
It's going to be like 60, 70 hours.
Yeah. Yes. My friend of mine told me it's like half the... My friend of mine told me specifically that he likes Persona 3 more than Persona 5 because... he likes the character development of all the characters. The way that they're like put together and slapped together is more by circumstance, less than that they're like a bunch of friends like going through the world together and like whatever. And it's also half the time it takes. And I'm like, okay, interesting.
Yeah, I looked at the time to platinum, and it's like 70 hours. No. So that's like,
you got a platinum.
It's better than 120 hours.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I was so over Persona 5 by the time I finished it, but like, measuring that against this, it's like, it's not even close. Like, Persona 5 is just a far superior game. So anyway, so
an extra 50 hours of superior game.
So the funny byproduct of this is Persona is all about like managing your time, and it's like, you know, that's what it becomes. So it almost makes me hyper aware that I've just been sitting and doing the same repetitive thing for a while in this game.
Wasting time on it.
Yeah, where it's like, I wonder
something else.
Well, it's like, because you're going through this negotiation every time you go into like a how do I spend my time kind of thing, and now I'm kind of internally going through that, like, how am I spending my time kind of thing. So I was like, okay, I want something else that I can play that's going to feel like really satisfying and like really like, you know, something that I can breeze through. So I reinstalled Batboy. I did the PS4 version, and I just played through it again. I got another platinum in it. two sittings. That game is like, after playing through it the first time, it was actually way more enjoyable the second time. Because I was just able to breeze through it. It was really, really nice. So I did that up until yesterday when the Final Fantasy VII demo dropped, which I did participate in. I won't discuss too much.
How long was it?
About an hour and a half.
Okay.
It's fairly short. Not bad. Yeah, it's fairly short.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to dabble, but I definitely will.
Yeah, and what you do in it is like fairly inconsequential. It's really not going to affect the like your primary playthrough. Yeah. You know what I mean? But all I'll say is that they chose exactly the right part of the game to make it the demo, and I am just totally fucking blown away. Totally blown away. It is crazy. It is crazy playing this game and just like thinking about it coming out. It's like, it is just so much better in every way than anything we're playing right now. And it's and it's not even close.
Really?
Like, storyline, fucking phenomenal. Music, unreal. Playing that battle system again, and they like matured certain aspects of the battle system, and it is just so fucking good. Like, the writing is so good. Like, everything about it is, it's like, dude, it is what we're playing games for. It's the reason why we hang on all year. It's like, these kind of games are the games that are like, yes.
Yeah. You know? That's a strong case to try it. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if I wanted to jump back into that, I should just finish the hard mode and kind of reacquaint myself with the game mechanics before the new game comes out. I finished Intergrade, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't finish Final Fantasy VII Remake Hard Mode, though, and I didn't finish the Bahamut fight.
I would probably not go back into that, because you're stepping into punishment.
I haven't gotten into
If you play
You don't want to play the first version of a game right before the second version comes out and then burn yourself off on it.
I don't know if I'd burn myself off on it, though. Do you think?
I don't think it's the optimal like experience to have. Like, you want to come in the game. I feel like typically a sequel is made to be played fresh.
Okay.
It's not made to be played directly off of the last game.
Okay. Yeah. So
for the Burnout case, that's exactly what happened when I played Zero Dawn before Forbidden West Horizon. And
that was crazy.
That was crazy. But this game, to have been reacquainted with this demo, and again, like the section that they chose, I think it's just so smart for how it, like, for a demo, right? Like, you're just playing around, and it was, oh my God, man. It's like, it's just great. It's just great. I would really like, I don't think, you know, I haven't watched any content about this since that last trailer or whatever. Like, I didn't watch the state of play and I had no interest in going into it. But something about this demo, I was just like, all right, like, I have to try it. I think it's because I was in this like burnout mode from Persona, and I'm like, I just want, like, give me something to put my teeth into, like, show me why games are fun again, right? And it fucking delivered, man. Yeah. It delivered.
There's like, and I think,
and
it might be,
it's not even that far away. It's like 2 weeks away, you know?
I don't really understand the current marketing campaigns going on
to have people
it.
Like me tell anyone that's, you know, that to have,
I mean, like, yeah, to have, but then also to have the state of play like right before the game,
the state
comes
of play
out,
is like too much.
That's what I mean. Like, I feel like they're just like flooding the consumer right now with Rebirth content
because they know that they've already sold the people who are going to buy it regardless,
so
and they're looking for the people who are like, well, I don't have a game and I buy one game a year.
The demo makes sense to me. The state of play does not make sense.
The demo is like, it is,
because I feel like they did the same thing with 16.
Well, I mean, imagine if you watched,
and that was a little odd too. Like, we watched the 20-minute like debrief on Final Fantasy 16, and like, let me tell you, it did not convince me to play that game.
Like, that was a great demo though, and I think for the same reason that this one is, where like the Final Fantasy 16 demo, it basically took out the entire prologue, which was great because then when the game came out, I could just play the game. I didn't have to go through all the bullshit.
That was cool,
and that's like sort of what's happening with this, not really, but like, it's,
I see,
yeah, it's a nice thing.
It's funny because like, the more
I'm hoping that it saves, sorry, like, I just wanted to add this, I hope it saves the fact that like it teaches you how to like do the combat and stuff, because it's like what a fucking demo is,
right?
And I hope that it remembers that so it doesn't tell me those things when I play the main game, you know.
It probably does.
It probably will.
I did go in when we were talking about it, like, I checked out like what the description says, but I put it downloading. It says it it's going to save all your stuff and apply it to your game. So well, hopefully so it will remember it gave you some tutorials.
So there's two things. Actually, this is one of the weirdest situations in a demo I've ever seen. So what is available right now in the demo does carry over. It records your progress and it allows that to carry over and unlocks that like bracelet or whatever, yeah. Right?
Gotta have that cosmetic.
There is an update coming out for the demo next week or something where it's going to add another segment of gameplay to it.
Yeah.
And that section will not carry over. So, but it's like, like the section at the beginning is like, this is like the taster, right? And then the second section is like, hey, we took a further section of the game and truncated it down so you can see what I assume is like the open world portion of the game. Like you could try that part out. And there, and it literally says it's like, this is not commensurate with what's going to happen during this part of the game. So like we're not saving that progress.
Yeah. Wait, as in, so it's not a part of the game. It's like a...
It's like we orchestrated specific things to happen for this demo in this spot. So like, so it's like the first section, like what you can play right now, they're like, this is real. And like, you're going to keep all that.
Yeah.
And then the second section is like, if you want to play more, we've got more, but none of that's real. So like, don't worry about that. So to me, I'm like, this is great because what I experienced in the demo was exactly enough. It was exactly enough.
I can understand. Okay. So I would say, well, two things. The first one is I can understand why they're pushing so hard because like sequels tend to not sell as good or as well as like the first one, right?
They're in a position of flex too.
Well, like I can imagine also Rebirth is probably potentially more than what the first game was, and I can imagine that they need to have enough money left over for the third part because they can't just end on the second part. So like the sequel, the second version is kind of like the riskiest piece. Like you need to have that done in order to get to the point where you can make a third one. So like,
I mean, it also seems like it's going to be so much bigger than the first.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Which means that the first game
was already a pretty large, fleshed out game. So
it was
like
a 60-hour game, wasn't it?
This game, I imagine, is going to cover some serious ground.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So what, is this going to be a 100-hour game?
I hope so.
Well, it's on two discs. Did you know what the download size is for the whole game?
No.
You ready? Oh, you want me to tell you?
150.
140 gigs.
You Gran Turismo is more than that, though.
Yeah.
You got to delete everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was Elden Ring.
You can go now.
I was thinking, like, I'm going to delete Gran Turismo. that'll be it. But I've reinstalled Gran Turismo. That sucked.
And my second thing is the game is only 2 weeks out, and I understand like these episodic demos are coming out, and it's nice and it's interesting. But like part of me thinks also, and this is just my own hang up, and maybe this is like scarcity mentality, but the idea that there will only be this Final Fantasy VII remake to ever exist again makes me feel like I need to be very pure with the experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's a totally fair perspective.
I worry that
everything you're saying about like wanting to have the experience, the correct way, you know, quote unquote, or, you know, the pure way. I can absolutely empathize with 100%.
I want to go to sleep at 5 p.m. and I want to wake up at 11:50 and I'm going to sit down with my silk pajamas and my candles and I'm going to play that game for the next like 3 days straight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what needs to happen.
Totally makes sense.
So anyway.
I remember when I used to call out of work when games would come out.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Like, I'd be like, sorry, I'm not coming in today. Do you remember Assassin's Creed 2 is coming out?
Do you remember when Halo 3 launched and the statistic of people at MIT not showing up for class was like over like 60% of the people?
That's I believe it.
Anyway, so I'm excited for this, and I'm glad the demo is so cool. It is really interesting how they've been using the demo platform and how they've been, again, like the Final Fantasy 16 demo and like being able to see that. That is interesting because they're adding value without taking away from the game experience, you
exactly
know what I mean?
I think it was the Final Fantasy 16 demo that gave me the faith that I needed to think that this wasn't just like a
Final Fantasy 15 demo,
like a disc in a pizza box.
You know when you get those IGN like the first 20 minutes of this game, it's like I don't want to see you play this game, right?
Yeah,
but this was intentional now.
Yeah, this I think it was very carefully selected.
It was very carefully selected,
and I'm like,
That's cool.
All I've been doing since I finished that was digesting Final Fantasy VII content. I'm just like refreshing story beats and like, you know, remembering stuff. Like,
yeah, I'm a little concerned that I don't know the original game well enough to recognize what's happening.
I can share a couple of facts that I were not totally gelled in my mind and now have since been reaffirmed that they were gelled
in
my mind.
Yeah, tell me.
So I watched a... So first off, shout out to this channel called Final Fantasy Union. It's a great, great YouTube channel that... It's like this English guy. It's like this English guy and girl that run this channel and they are just...
Like British?
Yeah. They are just so educated about the Final Fantasy games and do like deep dives about certain topics and like stuff. I just love that channel.
I mean, I would love some deep dives about FF7 because I do not understand the story at all.
Yeah.
Sephiroth and Zack and Cloud, and Cloud's not real, but what does that mean? Well, is Sephiroth real? I don't know.
So the one
Who's Genova?
So that's the video that I watched today is all about Genova. It's like, what is Genova? What is Genova's role in this whole thing? Like how to like what's Genova's relationship to Cloud to Cloud Sephiroth? And Sephiroth and all this sort of stuff. So
Genova sells.
Yes. Yeah, so the long and the short of it
she
is
came from space. Honestly, it feels a little like Kingdom Heartsy, the story.
It is. So Genova crashes into the world, creates a whole bunch of damage. This was like 2,000 years ago. So then the
is she an ancient?
So, no, she's an alien. Okay. She's confused.
Ancients are not aliens. Ancients are from the
Ancients
Earth.
Ancients tried to come and heal the Earth after Genova fucked it all up.
Okay.
But then Genova...
Are ancients also aliens? Genova...
What's up?
Are ancients also
they're just
aliens?
Ancients are just the humans. Old civilization that lived on the
planet.
Yeah,
so they're... Okay, so they're...
The Tetra.
They're from the Earth.
Okay. Yeah, they're Earthlings for all intents and purposes. But Genova comes Mid-year in. They come things. To heal the like Earth Guardians? Or whatever. Yeah. Genova ends up killing all the people, right? Or most of them. So there's very few ancients left, right?
Except Earth.
Thousands. So what they end up doing is they end up concealing Genova in such a way, the remaining ancients, and then time goes on, 2,000 years. Then as technology starts to advance, Shinra or whatever, they then are exploring the northern crater and they find the remains of Genova. And they think that Genova's just frozen and is like this like isolated thing. And they're like, huh, like what is this? And they confuse Genova as an ancient. And when they look, then they research all this information about the ancients. Okay. They're saying like, oh, like the ancients know this thing called the Promised Land. And it's this well of unlimited energy and whatever.
Right.
So when they find Genova, to their knowledge, Genova is like the only connection that they have to the ancients. So they're like,
they want Genova to tell them.
So they're like, maybe we can create new ancients using the cells Genova, right? So right here is where the story splits into Final Fantasy VII and adjacent Final Fantasy VII bullshit, like Crisis Core and Dirge of Cerberus and all this stuff. So at that point in the story, the doctor, the professor,
Hugo.
Gassed was the guy who extracted Genova. I'll get to Hojo. So Gassed extracts Genova and starts the Genova project. The Genova project is split into two cells. There's Dr. Hollister or something. He was in one of the... He was in whatever. It's like Dr. Hollister, right? And he's in charge of the G project, which is the Genesis project.
Genesis.
And the intention there was they take Genova cells, inject them into a mother figure, and then try to procreate with that mother. And then the children are supposed to carry some of the Genova cells.
Ancients.
And that
so
is,
they think.
And that's where Genesis and Angeal came from Crisis Core.
Mm-hmm.
They are the children of this mother that was injected with Genova cells, et cetera, et cetera. Then the other side is Project S, or Project Sephiroth, which is what Hojo was in charge of. And his method of creating new ancients was he was saying, let's just go straight into the fetus, right? So so his wife at the time, Lucrezia.
Lucrezia.
She was a professor, right? She was romantically involved with Vincent at one point, but then Vincent got locked into a coffin, et cetera, et cetera.
Came a vampire.
He's
man.
A vampire.
So, so Hojo impregnates Lucrezia and then injects some Genova cells directly into the fetus. That fetus is Sephiroth.
So wait, is Hojo the father
like
of Sephiroth?
Sort of, yes.
So like he was the sperm donor of...
Yeah.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
And then Sephiroth discovers that he is the byproduct of this experimentation, because Hojo continues to do all these terrible experiments where he's like injecting Mako into people, and Sephiroth then becomes the basis of the entire soldier project, and they try to clone Sephiroth into like these other soldiers. A bunch of them are failures, so dudes in the shrouds and all that.
Like, does he treat Sephiroth like his son?
No, he is a project.
Okay.
Hojo is a piece of shit.
Okay. So Sephiroth isn't like, my daddy did this to me. He's like, no, there's this guy that I live.
No, he's like, I was an experiment and fuck everybody. Okay,
he didn't think that originally. He thought that his mother died and et cetera, et cetera. And
Until events transpire, he learns.
His mother was Genova or something.
So he learns that his mother is Genova.
Kind of.
Because as he starts to look up all the texts of his inception and Project S and all this sort of stuff, then he's like, oh, I'm actually an experiment and I am linked to Genova. Genova's actually my mother, right? Yeah. So then he goes to try to find Genova, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. Things transpire. He takes Genova out. Cloud hurts him. He falls into the life stream. What ends up happening at that point, and this is where I got all fucked up
about. Yeah, I don't remember.
This is when it gets super Kingdom Heartsy. So when,
it's already pretty Kingdom Hearts.
When Cloud falls into the life I'm sorry, when Sephiroth falls into the life stream with Genova, he can't die because he is rejected because he has Genova cells. And the life stream from earlier incidents knows that Genova is essentially a poison and can't accept Genova into the life stream, right? So then Sephiroth's basically he in that moment, he like learns from the wisps of the life stream, the power that the ancients had or whatever. And essentially his body becomes frozen in like that ice crystal or whatever. But his like essence, Genova, the alien, right, is still alive and it is like rejected from his body or whatever. So then the Sephiroth that you're seeing is a projection of Genova. It's Sephiroth controlling Genova, who looks like Sephiroth.
Okay, so when we fight
throughout the game,
Sephiroth in the game, it's actually Genova.
The first few times, up until the end of the game.
Oh, that's why when you're on the boat and you see Sephiroth,
and he's just appearing out of nowhere,
and then you fight him, and then it becomes
and he turns into Genova because it is actually Genova the whole time.
So Genova is actually on board the ship and doing all these things.
So this is where it gets all fucking.
What is Genova's motivation?
Genova is being controlled by Sephiroth. And he is...
Hold on, are you saying Sephiroth?
Sephiroth, whatever. I hate saying that because it sounds like I have a lisp.
Oh.
Sephiroth?
Sephiroth. I hate saying that.
Yeah, no, I was like, okay. Anyway,
we're all on the same page. Yeah. So Sephiroth is in his ice crystal, and he's instructing consciously to Genova...
I think I do remember the ice crystal.
...to...
Yeah, okay.
You'll know, because remember at the end, Cloud hands the black materia over, right?
Yeah.
So why did that happen?
Oh, right.
Because he was controlling.
So why does that happen? Because he is projecting Genova to pull Cloud and his crew to...
the ancient temple or whatever.
Exactly, because Sephiroth is trying to manipulate Cloud to obtain the black materia, to give it to Sephiroth so he can come back to life and create this ultimate reunion and take over the world.
He needs the black material in order to get out of the crystal
or something. Yeah, like it's
how the hell would they have explained this in the game?
I need to watch the black materia thing.
There's a separate episode on that.
There probably is. Oh, this is what I'm saying. This YouTube channel is great.
Yeah, it sounds really
good. So I didn't know any of that.
I didn't know any of that either.
I was like, I thought Sephiroth is just some weird ghost guy, and it's like, psych, that's actually Genova. But then I had the exact same feeling where it's like, that's why he turns into Genova on the boat, because it is Genova the whole time.
So he's just, so Genova is just an alien of which he has cells of and has the ability to manipulate as a puppet through his cells.
Yeah.
Telekinetically.
Because they should, because the life stream.
Yeah. Exactly right. Yeah. Because life stream.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'll watch this video. This also
helps substantiate the reason why he murders Aerith, because Aerith is like the last ancient. And they have really the power Genova to resist this. What's that?
So it's really Genova kind of who's murdering.
It is Genova. Like, that's the fucked part.
Yeah, right.
When Sephiroth
but it's not
swords,
it's not,
that's not Sephiroth. That's Genova looking like Sephiroth doing that.
But it's Sephiroth who wanted to kill her because he has Jenova cells.
Exactly right.
It's not
so
Jenova's
will. For all intents and purposes, it is Sephiroth, but that's why Sephiroth's body is in the ice crystal, but he's also able to plunge a sword through Aerith.
Okay.
And they don't explain any of this in the game?
No, I don't know.
They kind of do, but it's PS1 translated from Japanese.
It's okay.
I'm very interested to see how they do it in the new game.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Yeah. All right. We'll end it here.
We could go much further for a lot longer.
We definitely
about
this. Could. And we haven't even got to news. So let's just jump straight into the news. You know, straight into the news.
Right. 40 minutes later.
Into this, okay. So basically one major topic tonight, but more of a speculative thing. I think this will be interesting and likely what every other podcast on Earth is going to be talking about for the next week. And that is this leak rumor, somewhat substantiated rumor, that many Xbox properties are going to make the transition over to PlayStation and other consoles. Right. Specifically, what we're talking about, where the rumors began, was around Hi-Fi Rush. So a Hi-Fi Rush had an anniversary update come out over this past week. And in it, there were new t-shirts that the protagonist could wear, like in the code or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
One of the t-shirts is a green shirt that says Shadow Dropped on it, like how the game Shadow Dropped on Xbox.
Right.
There is a red shirt that says Rock Out Anywhere, which is obviously an allusion to Switch. And then there is a blue shirt that says I'm Here, Baby, which people are assuming that that's
PlayStation.
So that's where the rumor started, and there's basically been more stuff that's helped substantiate Hi-Fi Rush coming to PlayStation. But then after that, there were, and I have an article for this that I'm going to cite, according to Xbox Era, which cites anonymous sources that claim Bethesda's RPG Starfield is currently planned for release on Sony's console alongside the previously rumored Hi-Fi Rush and Sea of Thieves ports. So
I could see that happening because
I could see all of those things
and
moving because
crazy.
Those are all like well-performing, well-ish performing games that they need to make more money on.
There's many implications.
Like Hi-Fi, it would make sense to me because those are games that could make more money on for whatever reason they need to or they don't need to. Like Hi-Fi Rush was a good game. Let's get it to more people. Like right. Starfield is like, we spent so much time on this game. We need to recoup some money from it. Like, get money however you can.
So what everything you're saying is very logical, but you also have to think about it through the fanboy lens, which would be these are arguably the strongest first-party exclusive titles that Xbox has.
Yeah,
and for them to come to PlayStation is basically like a big weight that drops on the scales of why should I buy an Xbox?
Yeah.
This is where all the controversy comes from. Go ahead, Justin.
Is this the same thing that kind of happened to Sega?
No.
I mean, in the case
they went down swinging with Dreamcast.
Yeah, but like Dreamcast and then inevitably now they just make games for
their
other consoles.
Well, their console died before they became third party.
Yeah. Okay.
Like the difference now is that Xbox 360s or Xbox Series X's are still being sold.
Right.
Now, this then all got substantiated. So I'm just going to get all the facts out and then we can discuss. So everyone's favorite Phil Spencer made an announcement. He said over the weekend, it was claimed that Bethesda Starfield and its upcoming Indiana Jones and the Great Circle could be released on PlayStation 5 in addition to the previously rumored Hi-Fi Rush and Sea of Thieves ports for Sony's console and Nintendo Switch. And earlier today, it was claimed that Xbox is considering bringing the Gears of War franchise to PlayStation 2. I didn't know that. With speculation about... This is from a Video Games Chronicle article. With speculation that a new strategy for the Xbox business mounting, Xbox's head of gaming released a statement on Monday telling fans that more will become clear in the next week. Quote,
okay.
We're listening and we hear you, Phil Spencer wrote on Twitter. We've been planning a business update event for next week where we look forward to sharing more details with you about our vision for the future of Xbox. Stay tuned.
Mm. I mean,
Game Pass is coming to PlayStation, y'all.
The war is over, guys.
This has always been there.
The war is over.
This has always been there. Not always, but like in recent years, they've made it clear that, you know, you should be able to play your games anywhere, and that they're not really in it for the console war, and that's not the game they're playing. So it honestly kind of makes.
I think it's because they knew they were losing.
I mean, that's what that kind of said, right? That's what Phil Spencer said when he had that, you know, humble interview where he was like, we're not even playing with the big dogs here. Like, that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to get you your games however we can get them to you. And they've always been, when they came out with, Xbox One, that was their platform then. Was like, play anywhere, do anything. Like, this console can be anything. And, like, we'll want you to play, we want you to be able to stream your Xbox games one day, like, on your Switch. That's what, you know, there were all these crazy, like, ideas of you can play anywhere. So, yeah, this makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. It is completely believable.
Yeah. No, I think it is. I think the like zoom out perspective though is like, I mean, it's a kind of a monumental thing that's happening, right? It's been the big three. It will no longer be the big three. Like that's essentially what we're talking about here. And I'll put it this way, like Activision was arguably making the most money from a publisher perspective. Xbox is basically just becoming a glorified publisher. Like that's essentially what we're looking at, which is just, I mean, it's a gravitational shift in the industry, you know? Like, this is, I mean, I would say unprecedented, but you bring up the Sega example, and it's like, that was a major console manufacturer that exited and went third party, and they're doing great now. But,
well, they have their money makers.
I wouldn't have expected this from Microsoft. And again, nothing's set in stone. We don't know exactly what the deal is, but like, it's ultimately not a good look, and I think it kind of substantiates the fact that Game Pass didn't work.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's like, so funny because I feel like...
Or it's unsustainable at the very least.
I mean, Game Pass has been going on for a while, but it's interesting because I feel like the only news coming out of Xbox has been... like, the only interesting news that was coming out of Xbox has been how they've been handling their properties and Game Pass, right? And then now, I feel like they're throwing their hands up too soon. I don't know. It just feels like we were just in line with so many cool things supposedly coming to Game Pass, and this was going to drive up value around Game Pass and Xbox. And then hear this already in like February of the next year. It's like Xbox, they could very well not be making another console.
Yeah, I mean the reality of the situation is that the games that they need to make are $100 million games. And you can't sustain the development of multiple $100 million games on a subscription service that's like bleeding members.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're not getting more people. And if you're not actively trying to push exclusives or sell your console, it's like it's just not going to work. So now it's like the byproduct of it has to be you play nice with the other kids,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
Like it's the only way that it's going to work. And if that's the case, then what's the point of your console? You know, they basically go into a PC market where it's like, you know,
I mean, maybe they will. I mean, I think it's a little,
well, they already are. I mean, Game Pass for PC and all that.
Yeah.
I think it's a little early to call it. I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
No, I'm just observing the signal that it's sending.
Yeah, but I think it's even a little early to say that like this is a bad look.
Liz,
we don't know. We don't know what the look is yet, and they could very well come out with some like convoluted. It's not really Xbox. It's not really Game Pass coming to PlayStation. It's like we're gonna have some select titles that are gonna be delayed, but. Maybe they like.
I mean,
who knows what the actual.
I hear what you're saying.
The actual facts of the situation are. If we don't know yet. They're going to announce them. I think it could be some sort of situation where it's not. You know, where it's not the end of Xbox.
I hear what you're saying,
where it could be a positive. Thing.
I'm not saying that it's the end of Xbox. What I'm just signaling, what I'm just signaling, and I hear you, right? The thing that I'm signaling is like it specifically stems to Starfield, right?
Yeah.
Like Hi-Fi Rush has been out for a while, and it was also like an unknown quantity, right? Whereas Starfield was like a major reason why they bought Bethesda. They needed a major console exclusive that was going to carry them.
Yeah.
Now, the game didn't perform super well, but the game hasn't even been out for, what, 4 months? Like, yeah. It's still a very new game. So to have that kind of conversation this soon after the game's release, it's all I'm saying is that it's just really not a good look, and it substantiates the fact that a game like that can't be sustained on Game Pass subscribers. It just can't be. Like, the conversation wouldn't even really happen if that wasn't the case. Hi-Fi Rush, I could get away with. Like, or Hi-Fi Rush makes sense because they weren't, to our knowledge, that game could have been developed way beforehand. Like, they might not have invested very much in that game because it came out when it did, right? And something like Sea of Thieves totally makes sense because any market that they would have absorbed on Xbox has long since played that game.
Right.
So they only stand to gain by moving it to another console. Like, that totally makes sense. Starfield is the canary in the coal mine where it's like, okay, that's not good. Like, that's arguably the biggest title that you have right now, and to potentially seek, you know, some sort of third party relationship inside 6 months of the game coming out is just like, a signal. It's just it says something.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I'm not sure that it's bad yet. It might be everything you're saying.
I think
maybe it will be a very smart move that gets them enough money to move to the next level and actually makes great business sense. Like, you know what I mean? I think it's a little too early for us to make a good or bad judgment on it before we know.
But what are the requirements for Xbox and like a console manufacturer to continue to be a formidable opponent in the industry? You need to have a specific amount of people looking to specifically Xbox to play specific games, essentially.
Be in your ecosystem.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily know if I subscribe to just the Game Pass as being like the reason why these things are happening, and that's unsustainable, because the truth is that Halo came out on Game Pass, and even then, I feel like that game was only okay, and even if it didn't really do that well, you know? And, like, that was one nuke, and the second nuke was supposed to be what Bethesda was coming out with, Starfield. But then that was free from Game Pass, and that went out with a fizzle already, you know? So it's like, both of these nukes were, like, dead to begin with, so then I can't imagine the Game Pass problem being, like, it's not a money issue, really. It's that their games aren't good.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like, it's not... I think it says less about Game Pass or Microsoft, more just about like those.
They're just quality.
Let's not forget Redfall either.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
I mean, and then you look at
and Xbox is the common denominator. So maybe they are fucking up as a publisher. Like, maybe they are not supporting the development teams the way that they need to be. But maybe those development teams are just not where they need to be in terms of making good games. You know,
my suspicion. And, you know,
I feel like it says more about Starfield being a crappy game.
Yeah.
So fair. How can I phrase this? My assumption, my prediction, the thing that I'm extrapolating from this is like the common thread are these are all Game Pass titles, right? So
everything on Microsoft's Game Pass.
So there's so think about the environment that you build a game up in. Like, Starfield, for all intents and purposes, didn't have to be good because they're not trying to sell the game anyway. You know what I mean?
Okay, that's fair.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, just the context of the game releasing, I think, affects the expectations on the team, or maybe how hard Microsoft really needs to scrutinize the development of these games. I mean, it's obvious. It is plain that they mishandle their games.
Maybe it is mismanagement, and maybe Game Pass is a portion of that mismanagement. I see what you're saying.
I can't imagine a world where a developer says, we're not going to put 100% into this game because it doesn't matter anyway.
They won't say it.
But that's what I mean. Like, I feel like people have these ideas of, like, you know, you knew you're gonna have a flop, so you did this, and I feel like you come up with these, you know, based on the evidence you're given, like, that would, from my perspective, that would make sense. And anytime you talk to anybody on the internal team, like with Redfall, where, like, you guys knew you had a flop with that game, and then Phil Spencer comes out and he says, no, we didn't. Like, well, on the test that we had, it tested very well. What we didn't know on our side is that when we would scale it up, we would have all these technical issues. Like, we weren't having those beforehand. Like, obviously, we were trying our... Put your hand away.
I have such a comment.
What, a zinger? What are you going to zing me with?
Not a zinger. Not a zinger. Just, it's an observation. Because this is a known quantity, right? Like... What is another example of a subscription service that we saw this type of thing happen to? And it's Netflix. Netflix, half the shit that comes out on Netflix is garbage now because they just need to fill the service with new content so it gives people a reason to be a part of the content. So from Xbox's perspective...
That's not the reason this stuff is bad. Like, they were making too many titles and they overextended themselves. And that's why the whole writer strike happened, is because they were firing their experienced writers who knew how to create these, like... lasting good storylines, and they were hiring young fresh writers because it was cheaper. Like, it was not like they weren't, nobody on that team was trying to make bad content.
Yeah,
like, well,
anyone's trying to make bad content. That's absolutely not what I'm saying. What I'm saying
saying they weren't trying their hardest to make the environment bad.
Content encourages, or because of the environment, it encourages rapid release of content, so it might not allow for them to scrutinize something like Redfall for another 6 months and figure it out and make it better, because like they're not going to have a game to drop on Game Pass, and Game Pass is going to be stagnant for 6 months until a new thing drops.
Okay. I would say that works with Redfall.
I don't think that's fair to say about Halo or
I would agree.
Starfield.
I mean, Halo,
I don't think that's fair to say about Starfield at all.
I would agree. That's a pretty well-polished game.
Yeah.
Albeit, like, it just, the game itself and the mechanics.
100%. 100% yeah, with
there
you
was no amount, more amount of time that was going to make
like, I see
that
what you're
game.
Saying.
And frankly, we were all aghast by Halo. It's like, really, guys? Like,
I mean, it was fun.
This is your thing, though.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
It was fun, but
also, like, you know what else happened on Netflix? Like, One Piece came out. That show is... phenomenal.
Garbage.
Like, that is... No. Oh. One Piece is a fantastic...
The live action
One Piece is absolutely fantastic. Absolutely hit it. And they put so much, like, money and work and effort into it and tried so hard. And, like, all you have to do, Xbox, is just make a good game. And then we will come and play it on your system. Yeah. Like, Netflix, all you had to do was make One Piece, and I'm going to stop what I'm doing and watch that show.
Yes. I would agree. I would agree. To refine the point, I wasn't saying that everything that comes out on Netflix is crap. I'm saying, like, there's probably 50 things. Didn't they say that there was going to be, like, a new show every month during COVID? Yeah. Like, every month they were going to drop something new? And it's like, half of them were bad? More than half of them were bad?
Yeah,
like,
some of them were just AI generated.
I get it, but you're saying that's not streaming.
Like, that's TV. But that, I get that comes out as bad.
Exactly. But Game Pass, It's video game TV.
I do understand your thoughts around like Game Pass being kind of like the plague that creates, or like creates the environment that breeds bad games, but I don't necessarily. It's like
a
too much
of
a jump.
Our assumptions.
It's too much of a jump. Like the truth is that like. Yeah, I don't think Todd Howard was like, "Oh, we just got acquired by Xbox for $7 billion. I'm gonna go to Hawaii and you guys figure all this other shit out, and then I'm gonna come back when it's time to do the direct." Like, I feel like that. I don't feel like that really happened.
No.
Like, there was no mass exodus at the company.
Whenever a company gets bought, there's a vesting period, right? Like, you have to be there and working.
And they were working on
Starfield.
They were working on Starfield way beforehand, I'm assuming. Yeah. Like, yeah, they definitely talked about it.
The game was
going to
be whatever the game was with or without Xbox, I think.
But then you think about Bethesda in general, and you're like, well, you came out with, like, you know, what is it called? Fallout 78 or whatever.
Yeah.
And all these other.
I wouldn't even say, like, there was no writing on the walls there. Like, it definitely could have been whatever, but it's also, like, to your point, I think this is something you mentioned earlier, like, it Xbox couldn't have saved them one way or the other, right? Like, there's no meeting that they could have gone in where, you know, Phil Spencer could have been like, this is how you make Starfield a triple A, you know, banger.
I do wonder whether
it's just
or not,
the game is going to be what it's going to be, you know.
I do want to know whether or not under the reign of Xbox, are there extenuating circumstances and specific types of pressures that they put on studios to do certain things? Like, I do think that probably exists.
They are the common denominator.
I mean, that is what I'm thinking. I mean, in the same sense, like, Redfall aside, like, Starfield and Halo aside, Hi-Fi Rush and all that stuff, like, I do wonder whether or not it's like, I mean, even they shot themselves in the foot with Baldur's Gate for the first couple of weeks. Like, they were losing sales there because they were just like, we can't put this out because we screwed ourselves claim, over because right. we made this one Xbox where we ripped everything out of it and then tried to sell it to people for half the price. Like, I just feel like there are certain decisions made on Xbox's side that are telling of how they think that they should be handling business. And then after buying all the studios, they are the common denominator. I think that's probably the case. I don't know if Game Pass is really the problem as much as just they're not making good content. And then even Phil Spencer's like
there must be some sort of management mismanagement on Xbox's side for so many things to either get delayed or come out too, you know, or come out too early, or, you know, just not content in the way that it should be. And it feels like, it feels a little cliche, but it feels like a sort of cliche, like studio versus artist. Debate, right? Of they're like, well, and maybe there is something to like the Game Pass model of like, or like not Game Pass specifically, but just like whatever their business practices are right now, if they're not generating the money that they need to.
But it's funny.
And they can't sustain it, that they are then taking that pressure and forcing developers to make rushed or bad decisions about their games to compromise on the quality or like the artistic vision that they had for them.
Yeah. I mean, it could be like, to bring it back to the, to the main point. Yeah, no, I think you're definitely right. Or it's absolutely an influence. It's absolute, like there's no way that that's not doing something to the equation. Right.
Yeah.
But there's a big parachute too. There's a big parachute too. That's going to be paying in some serious dividends in the coming years, which is their acquisition of Activision.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they probably don't even really have to worry because they know that even if PlayStation is crushing it on their exclusive games and whatnot, like any game that comes out on both systems, people already have PlayStation, so they'll just buy it for their PlayStations anyway. But the truth is like they're going to double dip.
Well, and that's where I totally agree with you, Liz, where it's like we don't know what's really going to transpire from this because that could very well be the case. Like this might just be the tide over to get them to, you know,
they just need
their next big Activision release.
Right. Till the rockets are ready.
And maybe they're like, you know, there's got to be some equation that they're looking at Starfield and they're like, okay, we have this many active players and whatever. And it's like, okay, like maybe it only took 4 months for that game to run its course on Xbox. And maybe now they're like, let's push our content elsewhere. Like, I mean, here's the thing. When Hi-Fi Rush comes out on PlayStation, I will buy it there. Like, I'm going to do that, right? And
yeah, that's the sad thing is I probably will too.
I don't even think it's
a sad thing. Or are you giving
it is a little sad that like I have an Xbox and I've been saying to myself like, oh, I really have a meaning to play that, but then I'd have to like get my Xbox out. Do I still have Game Pass? I gotta like get into this whole thing, and I don't really want to play it on my Xbox. I want to play it on my PlayStation.
Yeah, I'm
it's
fairly
just my preferred console.
That's the thing. It's like I would think in general, I'm a fairly console agnostic person. I will go to where a fun game is.
Right.
But like, if I have an option, if it's between two things, I'm gonna play it on PlayStation every time. Like,
why is that?
Trophies. Well, it's also just like I'm just comfortable in that ecosystem, you know. It's just where I enjoy to be.
But why the UI on PlayStation?
See, that's the big difference. Two consoles.
I don't know, something about the Xbox I'm just not a fan of.
If I was to be honest, I think the reason why I'm so adverse, not even adverse, I'm just so bored with the Xbox is because it's just too similar to the Xbox One,
right?
It doesn't feel fresh
to
new.
To the 360. They're
you
know, all
but then you look at the PlayStation.
Every UI has been the same.
This feels like a brand new car.
Yeah, I'm very into
it. The other one seems like I got a new lease. Like, it's not the same.
Yeah. You just upgraded your lease.
Yeah, right. Extended or something? I don't know.
Yeah, in general, I'm just like, I'm more attracted to that platform. Just it really is an ecosystem thing. Like, there's certain friends that I have on my friends list on Xbox that I straight up don't talk to anymore.
Yeah,
but like I'm familiar with basically every single name that's on my PlayStation friends list.
Yeah, because
like,
it's current right now.
Yeah, and it's like I'm curious what those people are playing and all this kind of stuff. It's just where I'd prefer to be. So yeah, so when Hi-Fi Rush comes out, it's like I'm certainly gonna buy it on PlayStation, and I have no problem sending the signal to Microsoft that it's like, if you put your games here, I will buy them. Right.
I'm sending you a message
and maybe
my purchase.
Yeah. And to bring it back to the point, it's like maybe from Xbox's perspective, they're like, we need to start exposing ourselves to more audiences. So it's like when you boot Hi-Fi Rush on PlayStation, there's going to be a big old Xbox logo right when you boot that thing up, you know? And maybe that's the win to them. Maybe that's the win that they're looking for.
Maybe.
You know?
Do you think?
I mean, maybe money, it would be incremental dollars to them, right? Like,
I think it would be more substantial than they think. They'd be getting 30 or whatever. No, 60%
like it would not be cannibalizing from or diluted to their existing pool of consumers.
Yeah,
like they could capture all that money would be new. Additional money as opposed to taking away from something that they would already have.
Yeah. Now it's also sort of a lame conversation because it's whatever. But it is what I mean is the fanboy kind of conversation. Okay. I'm not leaning in that direction, but it's just sort of the facts of it. But they have to consider that when they sell Hi-Fi Rush on PlayStation, they're allowing PlayStation to make 30% on that sale.
Yeah.
Whereas
they're not making anything on their own.
Well, exactly, own right? So for them, they're like, we'll take the 60, or whatever, 66%. We'll take that, you know? And, sure, Sony gets a clip. And from Sony's perspective, they're probably like, well, yeah. This is where the challenge that Microsoft is going to face comes from, because then suppose I am a captive audience and I'm an interested buyer, right? And the next console comes out, why would I not buy a PlayStation? If I know that the Xbox exclusives are going to come there anyway and I can only play the PlayStation exclusives on PlayStation, why would I own an Xbox?
Which is why I think that...
It just removes you from that marketplace. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth comes out in 2 weeks and that's a PlayStation exclusive. That's a major fucking reason to own that console. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a huge reason.
It's just... that alone, what you just said, is primarily the reason why I also believe the war's over. Japan won. You know what I mean?
It at least sends a signal to PlayStation owners, hey, that...
You made the right decision.
That cool Xbox exclusive is only going to be there for 4 months.
Yeah.
And then you'll be able to play it over here.
Yeah. It is weird because the entire idea of Starfield coming to PlayStation, part of me was like, oh yeah. Well, I mean, if it's on PlayStation, it's already hooked up. Yeah. My Xbox is also hooked up and I'm not playing it.
I'm not just interested.
It feels like it's not hooked up.
Yeah.
I haven't turned it on. Even though I could turn it on, it feels like I can't.
It is on and the fan is spinning.
Yeah. There's some kind of joke in this, but the most use I get out of my Xbox right now is the USB port that's on the back of it because I use it to
charge my PlayStation,
my other consoles.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's what it's used for. I mean, it's supposed to be an entertainment console center.
It's supposed to be anything.
It's sending power to that, that Mega SG.
That's hilarious.
Wow. It's powering my Sega console.
How poetic. A
weird poetic irony there.
Well, foreshadowing. Hopefully they come out with some clarification.
Yeah, they said next week. I don't think they gave a day.
Next week. I wonder how they will do it. Think he's just going to issue a new tweet? Or do you think they'll drop a stealth conference
Their next
video?
Console is just
Do they have... Does Xbox have a name for...
Their direct.
Their directs, yeah.
They have the developer direct.
It's not like a state of play. It's not a Nintendo Direct. It's a...
I could see...
YouTube video.
I could see it's Xbox.
I just imagine it's one of those cliche YouTube thumbnails where it's just Phil Spencer with a sad face and the title is just I'm sorry.
Sad Spencer.
Yeah.
Goodbye, YouTube.
Yeah, right, exactly. Goodbye, Xbox.
I can see Xbox steering deeper into the Game Pass and cloud gaming space. I can see them coming out with a stick that you buy, not a console anymore. I could see them using their Xbox One controllers that they're using for their Xbox Series X's and S's and then use it for whatever this is, the X stick. You know what I mean? Yeah. I could see that happening full throttle.
I definitely imagine that that's a future that we're heading towards. Yeah. There will be a point where console agnosticism is totally the thing. Because, I mean, it's all computing power. The only reason why we own a console right now is because we can't play games that look and play this good streaming. Once you can, then it's a wrap, you know?
Yeah, I mean, given the Portal is also working off of the PlayStation 5.
It's basically just a controller.
Right, with a screen. But I do think that the future is probably going to be in streaming games. And I do feel like we're getting close to the point where that could be useful to viable to the casual audience. And I do think Xbox is pretty poised for that happening because of the fact that they have the infrastructure on cloud gaming and they already have Game Pass and they're already dipping their toes into putting their exclusives on other consoles. It's like, all right, we're taking money from all other camps and you could still have your other thing, this $70 stick. I don't know. And the $70, $100 yearly subscription.
Yeah, it's going to be a subscription
model. Yeah, 100%.
Sure. To have their stick.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Do you think that, we'd get Halo on PlayStation?
No.
Yeah, eventually.
Why wouldn't you? Rule anything out. I would not rule any game out, any Xbox exclusive from coming onto PlayStation. I think it's potential that they could put anything there.
I mean, I believe Halo's going to be taken over by Square Enix, and they're just going to do a collaboration. Yeah. I don't know. There'll be a
Halo
JRPG Halo.
Halo would be painful for people, I think.
Maybe Bungie will buy the Halo property
back. That would be a weird homecoming feeling for me. Like,
apparently Bungie's in a bad spot right now.
Yeah,
like they've had like a bunch of people like quit or get laid off. Like they're in a bad spot.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of think the whole industry is in a bad spot. I mean, there's been a lot of layoffs.
Well,
I
think the creative director like just left, which is very weird because after they got acquired by Sony, we were talking about like vesting periods. It's like he left before his vesting period was met, which means like it was either hostile really for some reason or he just didn't want his money, which is like...
Or maybe he left. Like, maybe he didn't really leave on his own accord.
Yeah.
Maybe he was the hostile one. Mm. And they were like, you can either leave or we can fire you.
Very possible. Scandal.
What does Bungie even have? What are they worth?
They've got Destiny.
Destiny.
I mean, yeah, but like... The development team, what IPs are they coming out? Like, they're not making another Destiny game.
They're making Marathon.
Oh, that's right.
Making Marathon. Who knows if that's going to be the game, though. I imagine
has Bungie
really
peaked?
Well. Possible.
Back in middle school.
Possible. anyway. Bungie is the reason why we didn't get Factions. They killed Factions. Those sons of bitches.
I have faith in Bungie. Except for the fact that their creative director left. Now I have a lot less faith in
that. I think it was their creative director. I need to fact check myself. Yeah.
I don't know. Well, while you do that, I am going to say, like, it is kind of sad. I'm not sure if, Justin, if you were the one telling me a little bit more about, like, where all of these layoffs are coming from, or maybe it's the research that I've been looking into, but, like, this year is supposed to be a pretty bad year, like, outlook for game companies. Like, there's been overspending after COVID because of like, the boom that COVID gave to the industry. Yeah.
Destiny's 2 game director Joe Blackburn. So the guy who's...
Oh, Destiny 2, though.
Yeah, but the game...
The Destiny 2 game director?
The game director. That's like the guy that makes Destiny what it is left.
Yeah, well, Destiny wasn't even that good.
Corey Barlog leaving.
Yeah.
And then, exactly. And then you're going to still make God of War after that? Yeah. I don't know.
It's like Neil Druckmann saying, I'm out.
Right?
It's
like, yeah.
Well, now what?
Can I make more Last of Us without Neil Druckmann?
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Sorry, but you were saying...
No, I'm just thinking, like, yeah, where will the industry be after this year? I mean, where is all that talent on the streets going to go? Indie games.
I don't want to, like, wrap it up to irony because it's, like, people's lives. It's, you know, more than just an ironic statement, but I feel like it is somewhat ironic that, like, we had the greatest year in games in years last year, and still there's all this chaos and layoffs and tragedy striking the industry.
I imagine it's not over either.
No,
I mean,
I don't think a lot
of people were saying that, where it's like
I mean, I think it's in like a economic thing. Like it's not just the industry, right?
Yeah, there was a
like America's economy that's gonna crash. and there's the beginning of it
on the Sacred Symbols podcast. I think the guy who runs it, like the host, Colin Moriarty, he was talking to Jonathan Blow, and he was talking about just the state of things. Or not Jonathan Blow. He was talking to Jonathan Blow, like the Braid guy. And he was basically saying that, like, certain game studios are just, like, it's such an insanely crowded market, and everything costs way too much. He's like, you're just going to see some of these studios just straight up close. Yeah. Like, it's not going to be layoffs. Like, you're going to see, like, full companies go down because it's unsustainable, like, where people are at, basically. Because I think we talked about this last week, I think, where it was like COVID happened. They saw, hey, everyone's playing at this level. They're spending this much money, whatever. And then the entire industry scaled to that. And then when life became normal again, they were like, wait, we can't handle this. And
I mean, a lot of industries were affected like that, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I think gaming was probably the most bullish, as we're finding out right now.
But the gaming industry is growing so rapidly still. I mean, given, I understand, like, mobile takes up a lot of piece of that too. But,
right.
Like, I don't know. Like, right now it's somewhere in the ballpark of, like, $250, like, billion dollars looking to, in the next, like, 4 years to, like, grow to, like, $300 to $350. I don't know. It just seems like such a... There's just so much money here.
Where's that money going?
Where's that money going?
Fortnite. It's not going to the developers. I'll tell you.
It's going to Fortnite. Yeah, that's where it's going.
And Chinese app making.
And Tencent.
Tencent.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Well.
Anyway. Cool.
This was quite a topic.
That's a good topic. Yeah. That's interesting. That's a big move.
Yeah. We're going to have a bit more to
come. I'm sure we'll discuss it again.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed.
So until that time comes, thank you, listeners, for hanging out with us. Justin, are you going to play the Final Fantasy VII demo?
No.
Liz, are you going to play
it's the Final Fantasy VII demo? It's 2 weeks
from now. 100%. 100%. Love 100%. That. I love that. I love that for you. Yeah, it's a lot of good games coming out.
I'm going to play it 2 hours before the game comes out. That's what's going to happen.
There you go.
No, just play the game.
No.
You don't want to play the demo.
Because I am assuming if the demo carries over, then it's just going to be the first couple of hours in it.
So you start the game at 10 o'clock.
Exactly. Oh, okay. All right.
So I am playing the game.
And then you get your extra little bracelet, Moogle bracelet or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll download it.
It's going to make all the difference.
It was very exciting just
if
to...
If you download, are you going to be able to not play it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm very good at not doing things that I want to do.
Yeah.
And except for drinking. That's a problem. We'll talk about that. That's a lot to unpack. We'll talk about that on another podcast.
On that note, thank you, Liz. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, guys. We'll see you.
Thank you.
On the next one. Have a great day.
Bye. Bye.